Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting programs from radio's golden era. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. In this hour's series, we'll pick up on storylines of the Shadow of Fu Manchu and firefighters later on. But right now, it's Les Miserables, part 5 of 7, produced by the Mutual Broadcasting System and starring Orson Welles, episode 5 called The Grave, from August 20th, 1937.
So long as these problems are not solved, so long as ignorance and poverty remain on earth, these words cannot be useless.
These are the words which preface the fifth of 7 broadcasts based on Victor Hugo's great novel, Les Miserables. WOR and the Mutual Network present Orson Welles, distinguished young author, actor, and director, in an adaptation of the book which he has created especially for radio. Each episode portrays some development in the progress of Jean Valjean, a role played by Orson Welles, who is also heard as he reads the narrative passages. Les Miserables, Part 5, the episode which is called The Grave.
Hold!
Who goes there?
Police lieutenant on special duty for Inspector Javert. Any news of Jean Valjean? Have you caught him?
Caught him? We thought we caught him.
Ah, just look. Bright moonlight. 24 of us. A whole street full of police. A blind alley and Javert himself. And would you believe it, Lieutenant? He got away.
I'll bet Javert's boiling. Where is he now?
Out in the fields with the first squad.
Javert swears he'll find him if it takes every policeman in Paris.
He hates that man so much it frightens him.
There's something between those two that's worse than hate. Whatever it was, it happened years ago, when Javert was an inspector in some town in the south, and this Jean Valjean was the mayor.
Valjean, the mayor?
Oh, yes. Made his fortune in business, he did. And still has the money somewhere, hidden away. He called himself Monsieur Madeleine in those days.
Ah, but you can't fool Javert. Javert found him out and sent him back to the galley ship.
The double chain. How did Valjean get out of that?
How did he get out of this tonight? And mark you, Lieutenant, this time he had a child with him.
Yes. Javert has spoken of that child.
Yes. The offspring of some criminal woman, Jean Valjean, protected from Javert when he was mayor. It is very sordid.
But where did they go? Where could they go? Look about you, Lieutenant. Where is there room for an old man and a little child? What's beyond those walls?
Oh, what does it matter? No living man could climb those walls.
These things are not to be understood. The convict has vanished, and there's an end to it.
And if I know Jean Valjean, he won't be caught.
Yes, my friend. But if I know Javert, he'll go on hunting him.
Trapped in a closed street, pursued and surrounded, but Jean Valjean had escaped. Javert had found him out in his hiding place and chased him that night across the city of Paris till he came to this blind alley. A squad of police, a lone man, and a little child. Where was this Jean Valjean? No living man could climb those walls. But there are things to be learned in 19 years' service in the galleys. And Jean Valjean had learned in those years the dark sciences of the impossible. Pulling Cosette up after him, he had climbed one of those walls. He found himself in a garden, a wild and solitary place, black in the shadow of an enormous and shuttered building. What was this house? Wrapped snugly in his great coat, Cosette, the little child, soon fell asleep. And Jean Valjean, watching over her, knew that night that so long as this child should be alive, he should need nothing except for her, and fear nothing save on her account. He heard a strange noise, a sound like a bell shaking on the neck of a beast. There was something in the garden, something limping in the darkness, and like a man. To the outcast, all things are hostile, and all things are suspicious. He distrusts the day because it helps to discover him, and the night because it helps to surprise him. Jean Valjean shuddered because the garden was empty. Now he shuddered because someone was there. There was no hiding in that garden.
Ah! Oh! Ah! Oh! What is it? Oh, you frightened me. Who are you?
100 francs if you'll hide me.
Oh, God help us. Monsieur Madeleine.
What?
Monsieur, monsieur, how did you get here? How? Did you fall from the sky?
Who are you?
Don't you remember old Fauchelevent? You once saved my life.
Fauchelevent?
6 years ago, monsieur, you lifted my great wagon from the mud. I was caught there. I would have been crushed, Monsieur Madeleine.
Yes, yes. Fauchelevent. The wagoner. And you. You remember only Monsieur Madeleine, the mayor of Montreux.
Yes, yes. And what is the mayor doing here?
Fauchelevent, I'm in trouble. You must hide me.
Oh, not here, monsieur. No man is allowed here.
No one will know.
Oh, Monsieur Madeleine, you have arrived at a very good time. I should say very bad. There is one of the sisters dangerously sick. She is dying.
Oh, Father, I'm frightened.
Cosette, little one. Go back to sleep. There's nothing to be afraid of.
Monsieur, why do you wear that bell on your knee?
They put it on me, my child, so they know when I'm coming.
Fauchelevent, what is this place?
Oh, don't you know, Monsieur Madeleine? You sent me here. It was your recommendation that got me the job as gardener, monsieur. It's a convent.
A convent?
Yes, monsieur, the convent of the Perpetual Adoration and a young lady's school. But how did you get here?
Old friend, let it go that I fell from the sky.
Well, I believe it, monsieur. You don't need to tell me. I believe it. God must have taken you into his own hand to have a close look at you and then put you down. Only he meant to put you in a monastery and he made a mistake. Listen. The nun is dead.
Oh, Father.
Shush, Cosette. What is that bell?
It is the death knell, monsieur. That bell will strike every minute for 24 hours until the body goes out of the church. You hear it? It's like I told you, a stroke every minute. It is the rule of the convent.
Fauchelevent, what do you do here?
I am the gardener, monsieur.
A gardener? Of course. Fauchelevent, I'm in danger.
Oh.
Will you save my life?
Oh, ask me anything on earth.
Give me a job.
A job, Monsieur Madeleine? You, the mayor of Montreal?
Forget Monsieur Madeleine. I must have a job. I must stay here. No one must see me. Don't you see? This convent would save us.
Oh, but the little girl, monsieur.
Cosette shall be entered into the school. Please, old friend, make me your assistant in the garden. Present me as your brother.
The Reverend Mother might consent. But there is one thing. You see, monsieur, the gates are locked. The mother prioress will want to know how you got into the garden, and, monsieur, I won't be able to tell her.
What do you mean?
You can't enter the convent from here, monsieur. They must admit you from the street.
From the street? No. No, there must be some other way.
Oh, no, there is no other way, and here's the difficulty. The porter, not me, unlocks the gate. In order for you to come in, it is necessary that you should get out. For me, you have fallen from heaven because I know you. But for the nuns, you must come in at the door.
I see.
For the child, it would be easy. I have my door, which opens to the court. I knock, the porter opens. I have my basket on my back. The little girl is inside. I go out. It's all very simple, monsieur. Very simple, Monsieur Madeleine, except for you.
Well, can't you smuggle me out some way? Like Cosette? Undercover?
It's not possible, monsieur. Oh! There's the bells for me. It's the Reverend Mother. She wants to see me. I wonder why. Monsieur Madeleine, don't stir from this shed. It's worth your life. I'm coming. Wait a moment. I'm coming.
Reverend Mother, you sent for me? Reverend Mother.
At 8:45 in the morning, and at all hours, praise and adoration to the most holy sacrament of the altar. Monsieur Fauchelevent, I have called you.
I am here, Reverend Mother.
I wish to speak to you.
And for my part, I have nothing to say to the Most Reverend Mother, but something.
You have a communication you wish to make to me.
Reverend Mother, I am not young.
No, Monsieur?
No, Reverend Mother. And I have also a brother who is not young.
Indeed, Monsieur.
Not young and not old. An excellent gardener, honest and respectable, and the father of a little girl who would be reared under God in this house and may someday be a nun.
Monsieur Fauchelevent, can you, between now and night, procure an iron bar?
For what work?
To be used as a lever.
Oh, yes, Reverend Mother, and may I say further that I have served here in the convent too long with this bell on my knee not to have an excellent brother.
Monsieur Fauchelevent, we have confidence in you. You know that a mother died here this morning.
Yes, Reverend Mother, amen.
It is Mother Crucifixion, one of the blessed.
Yes, Reverend Mother, and now she's dead.
At 9 o'clock in the morning, and at all hours, praise and adoration to the most holy sacrament of the altar.
Amen.
Mother Crucifixion will be buried in the coffin in which she slept for 20 years.
Yes, I will nail her up then, and we'll put aside the undertaker's coffin.
The four mother choristers will help you.
What, to nail up the coffin? I don't need them.
No, to let it down.
Where?
Under the altar.
Oh, the vault under the altar?
We must obey the dead. To be buried in the vault under the altar. The altar of the chapel, not to go into profane ground, to remain in death where she prayed in life, that was the last request of Mother Crucifixion. She asked for it.
But it's forbidden.
Forbidden by men, and joined by God.
If it should come to be known.
We have confidence in you.
But Reverend Mother is the agent of the Health Commission.
God subordinated to the Commissary of Police. Such is the case. Is it settled?
It is settled, but I limp. I need help.
To limp is not a crime, and it may be a blessing. Monsieur Fauchelevent, I am satisfied with you. Tomorrow, after the burial, bring your brother to me.
Yes, Reverend Mother.
And his daughter also. We will admit her to the school. At 9:15 in the morning, and at all hours, praise and adoration to the most holy sacrament of the altar.
So you see, Monsieur Madeleine, that's the only thing wrong with the whole idea. The government coffin.
The government coffin?
The coffin from the administration. You see, Monsieur Madeleine, when a nun dies, the municipality physicians come and say, there is a nun dead. The government sends us a coffin, and the next day a hearse and some bearers to take it to the cemetery. The bearers will come tomorrow, and there'll be nothing in the coffin.
Put something in it.
A dead body? I have none.
Put me in the coffin.
Yeah. Oh, Monsieur Madeleine, put you in the coffin.
I've got to get out of here, and I mustn't be seen.
But, Monsieur, it's impossible. Suppose you should sneeze.
First of all, I must decide now either to be taken here or to go out in that hearse. There's only one thing that worries me. What will be done at the cemetery?
Ooh, I can handle the grave digger. He's a drunkard and a very close friend of mine by the name of Mestien. If he's not drunk tomorrow, I'll make him drunk and do his work for him. And when he goes away, I'll pull you out of the hole. That's simple.
Then it's settled. All goes well. I get out of my coffin, and you get me out of my grave.
Buried alive. Jean Valjean had arranged his coffin so he could live in it and breathe a very little. He was calm. He counted on that drunken gravedigger, old Fauchelevent's friend, the gravedigger Mestien. The plans were perfect. They would take him in the coffin to the graveyard, thinking he was the nun. The priests would read the services and go away.
Then Fauchelevent would take this Messian to a tavern, and Jean Valjean would be left in the grave. He would wait, patiently. Then Fauchelevent would return, alone, and he would be released. He was confident of the result. The four boards of the coffin exhaled a kind of terrible peace. It was as if something of the repose of the dead had entered into the tranquility of Jean Valjean. Jean Valjean felt himself lifted by the pallbearers. He felt himself thrown into the hearse. He felt it start. He felt himself driven from the clattering pavement of the streets to the hard ground of the boulevards, out to the open country and the grave. The boards of his coffin were thin, and Jean Valjean, lying there, could hear clearly what was spoken above him.
Pull up! Pull up! Rein in, driver, let me on!
Who are you?
I'm the grave digger.
The grave digger? You?
The grave digger, me. Let me on.
The grave digger is Father Messiaen.
The grave digger was Messiaen. He is dead. I am the grave digger.
I tell you the grave digger is Father Messiaen.
After Napoleon Louis XVIII, after Messiaen Gribier. Peasant, my name is Gribier.
Oh, so Messiaen is dead, is he? Let's go have a drink.
I never drink.
Comrade, I am the grave digger of the convent.
My colleague, I salute you.
Let's have a drink.
I have studied. I have graduated. I never drink.
Comrade grave digger, we must make each other's acquaintance.
It is made. You are a peasant. I am a Parisian.
Yes, I don't think you know, my comrade, how important it is that we know each other very well. Oh, very well indeed, comrade. Over a glass of something strong.
I have told you, peasant, I never drink.
Please, comrade gravedigger.
I ought not to be a gravedigger. I was intended for literature. Indeed, peasant, I am still a public scribe.
You are not the gravedigger?
One does not prevent the other, peasant. I cumulate.
Good. Let's have a drink.
Let's have a drink. Let's have a drink. Ding dong, ding dong, liquor, liquor. Have you no other topic of conversation? I'm a superior man, peasant. By day, I am a letter writer. I am the scribe of our most prominent bakers and cooks. In the morning, I write love letters. In the evening, I dig graves. Such is life.
Just one little good strong drink.
Business first. Walt, here we are at the graveyard. Here is the good priest and his choir boy waiting for the performance of the last rites. And here is my beautiful, fresh grave. Come, peasant, lend a hand with this coffin.
Every word, clearly. Jean Valjean could hear clearly what was spoken above him.
Alii in vitam aeternam, et alii in opprobrium, ut videant semper. De profundis requiem aeternam donae domine.
Et lux perpetua luceat ei.
Requiescat in pace.
Amen.
Jean Valjean heard suddenly a sound above his head, which seemed to him like a clap of thunder. It fell on the coffin lid over his face. It was earth. Earth from a spade. 4 inches from his face. They were burying him. It stopped up the air holes. He couldn't breathe.
Too badly! Too badly! I said... him away. I stole his grave digger's card and sent him home after it. You're safe. I fooled that Grivier, Monsieur Manley. Monsieur Manley? Monsieur Manley! Monsieur Manley! Why don't you answer me? What's wrong with you, Monsieur Manley? I'll get you out of that. Monsieur Manley! Monsieur Manley! Monsieur Manley! Are you alive? Monsieur Manley! He's dead! He's dead. He suffocated. Monsieur Madeline! Ooh, what shall I do? What shall I do? This little girl, what shall I do with her? Oh, Monsieur Madeline, the best man that God ever made, Monsieur Madeline. Monsieur Madeline, Your Honor. Monsieur Madeline? He doesn't hear me. He's dead. Ah! Don't open your eyes! Whoa! Ah, I can't stand it! Don't open your eyes at me!
Fauchelevent, what's wrong with you?
Aren't you dead? I thought you were dead.
So did I.
Don't open your eyes at me if you're dead. I can't stand it.
Fauchelevent.
Ah, out of the clouds and up from the dead. I can't stand it.
Dear old friend.
Just a minute. I'll be myself again. Did you faint, monsieur? Can you breathe again?
Dear old friend, we must go get Cosette and take her to the convent.
Yes.
Fauchelevent.
Just give me time. I'm old, but I'll get used to it. You can get used to anything, but oh my God, out of the sky and the grave in the same day, down from the cloud and up from the dead. Oh my God, I can't stand it. I can't stand it.
Javert, the inspector of police, watched the street where the convict, Jean Valjean, had disappeared. A hearse came out of the convent and passed Javert on its way to the cemetery. An old gardener came out of the convent and passed Javert carrying a covered basket. This gardener returned to the convent with another old man and a little child. He passed Javert in a carriage. For 3 months, Inspector Javert watched that street, and then he went away. In the convent, all was peace. The community was grateful for the services of its gardener. His niece was admitted to the school, and his brother was given a post as his assistant. So all went well for Jean Valjean. The years passed by. Cosette growing up in the school. Jean Valjean close to her in the convent garden and watching her as she grew. And so she grew.
No, naked Marius. Yaculis nec arcu nec venenatis.
When Cosette was 14, Jean Valjean withdrew her from the convent school. He took a little house for her in the outskirts of the city, and they lived there together, very quietly. Perhaps the police had forgotten Jean Valjean. Perhaps Javert had stopped watching.
You have an interesting story, monsieur. Now, what is your name again? This is simply for the record.
Marius. Marius Pontmercy.
Age?
20.
Occupation?
I'm a student.
When did you meet this girl, Cosette? And why have you come here to the police?
I saw her first 3 years ago in the Luxembourg. She used to walk there with the old gentleman, her guardian. And I've come to you because she's disappeared.
Is the house empty where this couple lived?
Deserted.
You've searched for them and inquired after them diligently, and their whereabouts are unknown. What do you suspect?
Well, I don't know. The old gentleman was eccentric.
Explain yourself.
Well, he kept strangely to himself. He never left the house except at nightfall. It was almost as though Well, as though we were hiding from someone.
And the girl, Cosette?
She is quiet, monsieur, but very beautiful.
I see. When you last saw this Cosette, did she speak to you of anything untoward? Can you remember any circumstance which struck you as peculiar?
Yes, monsieur. The old gentleman seemed frightened.
Frightened of what?
Well, I can't explain it, monsieur. There was a man. A man Cosette had seen, or thought she'd seen, standing on the edge of the garden. The old gentleman seemed to be frightened of that man.
Did you see this man?
I don't know. I saw a shadow. If it was a man, he was big like yourself, monsieur. And I don't know how he got there or how he moved so quietly. Cosette said that he wore a long great coat and a flat hat and carried a stick. I remember her telling Monsieur Fauchelevent.
Is that what he calls himself?
What did you say, monsieur?
Nothing. How long afterward did they disappear?
Why, they must have left that night, monsieur, when I'd gone home. It's 5 weeks now since I've seen her.
Monsieur Marius, don't trouble yourself any further. Your loved one shall be returned to you. I will look for that girl, and I will look for that man. I will look very carefully for that man, and I will find him. If you hear anything else, please notify me at once here at police headquarters. My name is Javert. Good day, monsieur.
WOR and the Mutual Network have brought you part 5 of Victor Hugo's absorbing masterpiece, Les Miserables, the episode which was called The Grave.
Les Miserables, on Tuned to Yesterday, episode 5 of 7, from August 20th, 1937, on Mutual. You're listening to an hour of series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for episode 18 of The Shadow of Fu Manchu. We've been following this storyline for the past 5 broadcasts. This was first heard on June 16th, 1939.
The Shadow of Fu Manchu. Based on the stories by Sax Roma. Gone with Karame, Dr. Petrie watches as Fu Manchu, by injecting a mysterious liquid, apparently brings Karame's brother back to life. Karame gives Petrie some of the liquid, and later he describes his experience to Nayland Smith. Convinced that Fu Manchu has caused the death of Lord Southery, Smith and Dr. Petrie have gone to Stradwick Hall, where they have convinced Henderson, the Southery attorney, that the peer is not dead, but merely in a state of suspended animation. In the family tomb, as Petrie injects the liquid given him by Karame into the arm of the apparently lifeless body of Lord Southery, Dr. Fu Manchu suddenly appears.
Stay with Southery, Petrie. I'm going after Fu Manchu.
Nayland, come back, you fool!
Henderson, help Lord Southery. He'll be all right presently.
I'm going after Nayland.
Nayland!
Here, Petrie!
Are you hurt?
I saw you fall.
He had a dacoit with him.
Look here.
A knife, great Scott.
Near thing for me, Petrie. Barely missed me.
Listen, that car. Fu Manchu's. By Jove, Petrie, we've lost him again.
But we've saved Lord Southery. Fu Manchu will credit us with a skill as great as his own.
We must get to our car and try to catch him.
Waste of time, Nayland. We have no idea in which direction he's gone.
I have a good idea. Stradwick Hall is less than 10 miles from the coast. There's only one practical means of getting an unconscious man secretly from here to London.
You don't think he meant to take Southery to London?
Before shipping him to China, yes. His clearinghouse, as you yourself once said, is probably the Thames.
A boat of some sort, eh?
Sea-going yacht, lying off the coast in readiness. Fu Manchu may even have had it in mind to ship Southery direct to Shanghai and the Black Poppies.
And he failed. This is a triumph for you, Nayland.
Only half a triumph, now that he has escaped us. But we still have one chance. A raid on the house in Commercial Road. Have you any idea when the word will come from Karame?
No, but because of her brother, she'll not delay. Oh, here comes Henderson with Lord Sutherland.
Seems, gentlemen, I am risen from the dead.
A weird moment, Petrie. A newly buried man speaking from the mould of his tomb.
Lord Southery,
you've been spared from the fate of heaven knows how many men of genius.
What do you mean, sir?
The Black Poppy Society lacks a Southery. But I'm certain that Dr. Fu Manchu was in Berlin 3 years ago. And without visiting the grave of your Teutonic colleague, who died under mysterious circumstances at that time, I venture to predict they have a von Humber.
Oh, by heavens, sir. You mean to say that von Humber's not dead?
I mean exactly that, Your Lordship. If you recall the circumstances under which he apparently died, angina pectoris, I believe it was, Petrie?
So the papers stated.
It's true. I met his physician in Paris shortly after his death. He assured me that von Humber had died very suddenly of a bad heart.
As I remember the man, he was strong and robust. Practically a young man in his early 50s. And his death was a great shock to his friends. He'd never complained of heart trouble.
By Jove, sir. Now that you speak of it, von Humber's doctor did say his death was quite a shock. It's unthinkable. Impossible.
Where Fu Manchu is concerned, Your Lordship, nothing is impossible.
But who is this Fu Manchu? Why don't the authorities apprehend him?
Perhaps, Your Lordship, that's the very reason they don't apprehend him. Because they don't know who he is, nor where to lay hands on him. I suggest that you guard yourself carefully. If you fall into the hands of Fu Manchu again, well, his futurist group in the Orient knows how to make men work. We are no other than a moving show of magic shapes that come and go, round with a sun-illumined lantern held in midnight by the master of the show. And in this case, Petrie, Fu Manchu is the master of the show.
If we only knew exactly who he is, Neil.
Who is Dr. Fu Manchu? I've been asked that countless times, old chap. I don't know. Nobody knows.
What group can we hold responsible for the overthrow of the Manchus?
In my opinion, Petrie, Fu is one of the leaders of a group not yet ready to show its hand.
There's at least one thing we can be sure of. None of the three places we raided here in London were his headquarters. The opium den, the mansion near Windsor, the houseboat on the Thames. Can it be the place to which Karame took me?
Heaven only knows. That place in Commercial Road had a look of permanency, you said?
Oh, very much so. Probably an old warehouse. Had that appearance from the outside, anyway. Inside, it was exquisite. I've never seen such oriental luxury. Rugs, inlaid tables, priceless hangings, bronze lamps.
Mm-hmm. And the laboratory?
I'd give 5 years of my life to spend an hour in that laboratory alone, Nayland. Hello. Karame? You... Yes? Where we left the taxi in Commercial Road. In half an hour? Yes, I understand. We'll be there.
Well?
We're to meet Karame in half an hour in Commercial Road. She'll lead us to Fu Manchu's house.
How many men have you here, Weymouth?
Enough this time, I hope. We have the place completely surrounded.
The river police?
Their launch with Mackay in charge is lying off the wharf. No escape that way.
I see. Who's in charge of your outside men?
Inspector Logan, one of the best. He has his instructions.
All ready, then. Come, Karame. Lead the way.
You will keep your promise to me?
What do you want us to do?
You and Dr. Petrie must enter first and bring out Ali. Until he is safe, you are to make no attempt upon Dr. Fu Manchu.
How can we be sure we are not walking into a trap?
You must accept my word. Ali, my brother, is in the laboratory. There is only one servant in the house. He dare not enter the presence of Dr. Fu Manchu without orders.
And Dr. Fu, where is he?
We have nothing to fear from him. He will be your prisoner in 10 minutes, if you do as I say.
In the dacoit. Where is he?
Nowhere near the laboratory.
I think I'd better come, too.
As you please, Inspector Weymouth. But move quietly. If you are ready, come.
Let no one in or out of the place, Logan. Give us 10 minutes. If we're not out, follow. I'll see that this door is left unlocked.
Right, Inspector.
Come. We must not delay. Make as little noise as possible. Now, up these stairs. Then we will be in the house proper.
This is the outer room, Nayland. Beyond, the balcony and the laboratory.
Move softly across this chamber. We dare not make a light.
I'll use my flash.
Come, quickly.
At last, I stand in the house of Fu Manchu. A great moment, Petrie, for me.
And one we'll not soon forget.
A greater will be when we have Fu Manchu behind bars.
Karame, where is she?
This way. Along the balcony and down the stairs into the laboratory.
Look, down there under that dim light. Is that the boy Petrie on that couch?
Yes. Karame.
Shh. Make no noise. Come, Dr. Petrie.
Down these stairs, Neyland.
The boy's dead, Petrie.
I'd swear it.
No more so than was Lord Southery, Neyland.
Oh, be quick, Dr. Petrie. Awaken Ali. I am afraid.
Make the injection, Petrie. Quick.
Right. This liquid, Neyland, spells life for the boy. And I hope ruin for Fu Manchu. There. He'll be all right presently.
Oh, if it will only awaken him. You are sure, Dr. Petrie, it is the liquid I gave you?
Of course. You see? It's taken effect already. A few moments, he will awake.
By the great Lord Harry, he's breathing. I'd have sworn he was dead.
And now, Karame, where is Dr. Fu?
Yes, Karame, where is he? The place seems deserted, not a sound.
Look around you. Raise your flash, Inspector Weymouth.
What? By Jove. Those shelves, that case against the wall, empty. All of them. The room is stripped.
The strange silence of the place is understandable, then. Our bird has flown.
Academy, you've warned him. You promised to help us capture him. You've deliberately
no,
let
no,
us...
No, no, no. Oh, Ali, look. He's recovering so slowly. Are you sure, Doctor, you've made no mistake?
His pulse is strong, his heart action normal. But you, Academy, have misled us. I trusted you.
Dr. Petrie has kept his word, Academy. You and your brother are free. If Dr. Fu Manchu is still in this house, lead us to him.
He is here, and I shall keep my promise. But first, let Ali be taken out and placed in safety. Will you take him, Inspector Weymouth?
I'll turn him over to Logan, Mr. Smith. I'll be back in a moment.
Now, Karame, we've done our part. You must do yours.
Now, please, lower your voices. He is near us, and I'm afraid.
You have nothing to fear. But if you don't hold to your bargain, I shall place you in the custody of the police. Once more now, where is Fu Manchu?
Look behind you. There at the end of the room. But do not enter that alcove. Even as he is, I fear him.
Come, Petrie.
We'd best wait, Neyland, till Weymouth gets out.
We've waited long enough. Here, this curtain. Oh, Dr. Fu Manchu.
By Jove, he's asleep, Neyland.
No, that pipe in his hand. Don't you recognize the odor?
Of course. An opium sleep. By Jove, what luck. We have him helpless. Come on, we'll take him.
No, no. Close the curtain. The police must get to him in some other way. They must take him, not you, Dr. Petrie.
Oh, Weymouth. What about the boy?
With Logan. He'll send him to the station where they look after him. And now, where's our man?
Here, Weymouth. Behind this curtain.
By the great Robbie Burns asleep. Oh, seems helpless enough. What's wrong with him?
Opium. A drugged sleep.
Oh, a simple matter to take him, then. Little did I think it would be so easy when the time came.
Nor I, Weymouth. But helpless as he is, I'll not be satisfied until you have handcuffs on him.
Come then. We've wasted enough time.
Dr. Petrie! No, no! Do not go in there! You must not! On your life! No!
The Shadow of Fu Manchu, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 16th of June 1939, a syndicated recording. And we close this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday with a broadcast of Firefighters. Amazingly, this serial survived the test of time with about 140 broadcasts intact and in good sound. Next, we hear episode number 5 from November 18th, 1949.
Stand by all stations.
Attention, all districts. A 5-alarm fire, 5 bells. Move in immediately.
That's it. Let's roll.
Let's go. Firefighters.
Presenting Firefighters, the true-to-life story of our unsung heroes who stand ready to ride by day or night against our most murderous enemy, the demon of fire. In just a minute, we'll visit the home of Tim Collins, rookie fireman, who is wondering if he will ever become a full-fledged member of the fire department. True, he has passed his probationary training. He has even made a special run on the aerial ladder truck in an emergency when all men available were called for special duty. But now, he is waiting for an important letter. The letter that will, or maybe will not, tell him he has won permanent appointment to the fire department. Let's go, firefighters! Let's go to the home of Tim Collins, son of famous Ben Collins, fire department hero who lost his life in the line of duty when Tim was only a boy. Tim is at home today, waiting for official notice of his permanent appointment to the city fire department, and dreading that his appointment may not be confirmed. Before breakfast, we find him asking his mother.
Hey, Mom, what time does the mail get here?
Now, Tim, every day the mail gets here at the same time. That's the same time I told you 5 minutes ago.
Oh, yeah, about 11, you said. I guess I'm a little jumpy today.
You're as jumpy as a cat in a hot oven, Tim.
Gee, nothing could go wrong, could it, Mom?
Now, what could go wrong? Didn't you do as well as the next one in your training course?
Well, you never know.
As if they'd fail to appoint Ben Collins' boy. Why, your father was the most looked up to, the most generous, the bravest. Well, you know what Bob Cody said.
Chief Cody? All he said to me was I'd have a chance to make good if I've got the stuff. And if I get my appointment, I'm to go down and see him at headquarters.
Well, then, stop fretting and wait for the mail. Call up the stairs for Jimmy and Trudy if you want something to do.
Oh, sure, Mom. I'll get them down for you.
They'd better get down if they want some breakfast before school.
Hey, first platoon, chow call. Hit that pole, you two.
Hit that pole, Trudy.
First platoon reporting for chow call, sir.
Me too, sir. Climb.
Hey, fireman fourth class Jimmy Collins. Secure that bell cord.
Yes, sir. Bell cord secured, sir. Ouch!
Now, that's enough. You two firemen stop pinching each other and sit down to breakfast. Glory be, you'll never get to school at this rate.
Timmy, did your letter come yet? Are you a real rookie fireman now instead of just a probationary?
Probationary, Trudy. And you know very well the mail doesn't come till 11.
Mom, can we stay and see what the letter says?
Oh, Mom. You'll hear all about it the minute you get home from school this afternoon, children.
Gee, Mom, we ought to celebrate.
Tim doesn't get to be a fireman every day, I guess, Mom.
Now, if you two don't stop talking with your mouths full, we'll celebrate, all right. You wait and see.
Yeah, if there's anything to celebrate.
Oh, hush, Tim.
Gee, with a cake, Mom? A big cake, four layers, like you make with pink frosting, Mom?
And pork chops, Mom. I hate pork chops, but Timmy loves them, don't you, Timmy?
Yes, yes, yes. A pink layer cake with pink frosting. And all the pork chops Tim can eat. But we'll have the chops first, if you don't mind, and the cake for dessert. And now, will you two finish your breakfast and be off to school?
Hey, was that the mail, Mom? It's time, and I thought I heard the bell.
Yes, it was the mail, son. See, he left these letters.
Ooh, let me have my notice, Mom. No, you open it and you read it first, huh?
Tim, there's nothing here from the fire department.
Oh, but my notice of appointment. Well, look, may I look for myself?
Yes, you'd better, son.
Oh, nothing but bills and advertisements. Mom, you don't suppose I didn't get my appointment?
Oh, no, Tim. Why, your letter's in the afternoon mail, that's all. You'll see, you'll get your notice this afternoon.
Oh, yeah. Sure, Mom. Well, I guess I'll finish cleaning the rooms upstairs.
Why don't you go for a walk, Tim? Get some good fresh air.
No, I'd rather help you with the housework, Mom. Besides, first platoon always does the committee work. You know, cleans up around the station. Hello? Yeah, this is Tim Collins. Oh, hiya, Pete. What's on your mind? You did? Well, you got your appointment through the mail. Well, say, that's fine. Congratulations. I'm glad you... Huh? Well, no. I said no. I guess my notice didn't get into the mail in time. Yeah, well, at least I didn't get any notice that says I've been rejected, so... Yeah. Yeah, maybe in the afternoon mail. Ought to be here any minute. That's what I'm counting on. Uh-huh. Yeah, sure. Well, there's life, there's hope. All right. Goodbye, Pete. I'll be seeing you. Nothing, Mom. Just a fellow from my training class got his notice this morning.
Tim, I'm right here behind you. No need to shout.
Oh, I didn't hear you come in, Mom.
Son, the mailman just went by the house. I called out to him, but there's nothing for us.
Well, I guess that's that. I guess I just didn't make it, that's all.
Oh, no, Tim, not you. Not Ben Collins' boy. I'm going to call Bob Cody. Let me have that phone.
Call Chief Cody? Oh, Mom, you mustn't. These appointments, he hasn't anything to do with them.
I don't care. He was your father's best friend. He'll tell
him. No, please, Mom. I'd rather ask him myself. I will tomorrow. I'll...
Let me see your letter first, Timmy.
Where is it, Timmy? Did Chief Cody sign it himself, Timmy?
Children, Jimmy, Trudy, there's been a delay. Now, don't ask questions, please.
My appointment didn't come through, kids.
Oh, Tim, what does that mean? You're not even a rookie?
Gee, Mom, no cake tonight? No celebration?
Cake? Well, yes, the cake's in the oven this minute. Trudy, you'll help me make the frosting. And Jimmy... You can march right down to the store and get the pork chops. We'll celebrate, all right, just to show that the Collinses can hold their heads up whatever happens. Glory be, that's the biggest pan of chops I've ever had on this old stove, even in your father's time.
Oh, look at the juice. It's fatted right into the gas flame.
Oh, we must be careful, Trudy. The fat could flare up in a minute and set fire to this place. Oh, glory be, what's that at this time of day?
Somebody at the door, Mom. Shall I tend the chops while you answer it?
No, your brothers are out there. They'll answer the door. Oh, that sizzling fat's a nuisance. Trudy, get my pink frosting for the cake out of the refrigerator.
Okay.
I'll begin to fix it now.
Mom, you better come into the living room.
I'm busy, dear. Who was that at the door just now?
Mom, it's Chief Cody, the chief of the whole fire department himself.
Bob Cody.
Oh, Mom, can I go talk to him?
Talk to him? That's what I want to do this very minute. Jimmy, you stay here and help your sister.
Oh, Mom.
Not a word now, young man. Trudy, put my big apron on and stop frosting that cake.
Oh, boy, pink frosting.
And behave yourselves, both of you, until I get back.
You let that frosting alone, Jimmy Collins.
Mom said I should help, didn't she? I'm helping, aren't I? You watch the old pork chops while I frost the cake.
Jimmy Collins, you give me that mixing bowl.
Hey, let go. Ouch. You watch what you're doing, Trudy Collins.
No, sir, not a word all day. Oh, Mom, here's...
Yes, Chief... I see him. I'm glad to see you, Bob Cody, because I have a question to ask. And I hope you'll give me a straight answer.
Well, no, Mrs. Collins, when I know the answer...
Did or did not my boy pass his training course for the fire department? And if he did, why haven't we had so much as a postcard from the Department of Health? What?
What's that?
Oh, the kid. Something's wrong in the kitchen.
Help! Fire! Fire! The stove's on fire!
Come on, this way, Chief.
Help! Jimmy, help! Judy, take my hand. Judy, we've got to get out of here.
Glory be, it blazed up. The whole kitchen's aflame.
Oh, get back, Mom. Give us some room.
Follow me, Collins.
Yes, sir. Jimmy, Trudy, it's all right now. We'll get you out.
Yes, it's all right now, with Tim Collins and Chief Cody coming to the rescue. But there's a dangerous fire blazing in the Collins kitchen where Trudy and Jimmy, struggling over the bowl of frosting for their mother's cake, have upset the fat from the frying pan on the stove. The fat has flared up with explosive fury, and Tim Collins has a hungry blaze to fight right in his own home. Hear how these trained firemen attack the fire in the Collins kitchen in our next True to Life episode of The Firefighters. In just a moment, Chief Bob Cody will tell you, boys and girls, how you can help the firefighters in your own town. And now, Chief Bob Cody with a special assignment for all junior firefighters. Chief Cody.
Hello there, boys and girls. This is your friend, Chief Cody. And here's your special assignment. I want you to do a little teaching for me, the kind we firefighters do all the time. You're to pass the word around to your friends. Tell them to show a proper respect for fire. That's right, respect for fire. Tell them how dangerous it is to take chances with fire, whether it's in a stove or a fireplace or an incinerator where folks burn papers or still locked up in a match where some little fellow might let it out and set fire to his clothing or even burn down the house. So fight fire by teaching your friends to respect fire. And we firefighters will be grateful to you. Well, that is all, and goodbye for now.
Fire Chief Cody and the young rookie fireman Tim Collins will be back tomorrow at the same time on the same station when you hear...
That's it. Let's roll.
Let's go, firefighters!
Firefighters, on Tuned to Yesterday from November 18th, 1949, a syndicated recording wrapping up this hour of series on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next week at the very same time as we continue these stories from radio's past. And until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVonier. Thanks for tuning in.